And welcome to another edition of the Odyssey Radio Show. We talk about ancient mysteries, metaphysical topics, and unfiltered, non-corporate news of the day. I'm your host, Mike Schultz. And we're really excited to be on a new time slot. We're going live every Monday from 8 to 9 p.m. So come join us, and we hope to grow a great audience. For the inaugural live show, I wanted to bring on another of the co-hosts to the BBS Radio Network. Her name is Troika Celeste St. Germain. And she has a great show on metaphysical topics as well. And welcome to the show, Troika.
Hi, Mike. Thank you so much for inviting me to be on your show.
It's really an exciting network to be a part of, isn't it?
Oh, BBS is just great. It's really fabulous. And Don, our engineer and fearless leader, is just the kindest, most generous man. And we have such a great variety of show hosts, and it's wonderful to get to meet them all.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're going to grow in leaps and bounds this year. I want to just basically have a metaphysical dialogue with you. I know you're very deep along the spiritual path, so let's just go for it. And, I want to first talk about St. Germain. Now, my understanding in studying esoteric topics is that he was an actual human being. He lived in Europe in the 1700s. He was a metaphysical teacher, but when he passed on, he somewhat stated as an ascended master. Now, maybe you can correct me, or why don't you tell me a little bit about St. Germain, the person?
Okay. Well, St. Germain had many embodiments, on the planet. He was St. Joseph, and today happens to be St. Joseph's feast day for the Catholic Church, so it's kind of a St. Germain day for me. And he was Merlin the Magician during the Camelot, King Arthur days, which really did exist. They're not just legend. And he was in Atlantis. There was a violet flame healing temple that he was in charge of and was there. And a few other incarnations here and there. He was Francis Bacon, the one who actually, and Roger Bacon. He was Bacon twice.
That is and, now and, Bacon was involved with the Knights Templar, wasn't he?
Yes. Yes, and you know, and the thread throughout his lifetimes was always anchoring in the divine teachings and bringing in the violet flame or higher vibrational frequencies and information on how we can achieve those higher frequencies ourselves. He was instrumental with the Knights Templar and the Rosicrucians and the original Masons that were still very, not quite like the Masons of today are, I'll just say that. Let's go with that.
Well, it's mind-blowing you mentioned Bacon, because I'm doing my third DVD right now, and he was the one who was involved in getting treasure over to Canada, to Oak Island, and hiding it. I don't know if you're familiar with that story.
You know, I haven't studied too much about the Bacon life. I was
right.
Thinking of that about a month ago. Gee, I really don't know that much about the Bacon boys. I should, because every time I study one of his incarnations, I get new insight and see more parallels. But one of the, and I forget if it was Francis or Roger, but one of them was the real Shakespeare, who wrote all the things that are credited with Shakespeare. And during that time period, all the Shakespearean writings hid higher knowledge in them, and talk about spiritual teachings if you know how to decode it. For instance, one of my favorite is All the World's a Stage. We're merely actors and actresses making our entrances and our exits. That's a reference to reincarnation and how we're all one, but we play different roles at different times for different experiences and stuff. And, there's so much of Shakespeare's writing that is peppered with secrets, But anyway,
well,
to answer your question.
So timeless. Sure. Now, we could go off in a million directions, but it's fascinating.
Right.
He's an ascended master who keeps returning to the planet.
Yeah, well, actually, I think he was an ascended master to begin with, because if you study all those lifetimes that he had, quite a few of them, or most of them, have a common theme that there's a secrecy and a misunderstanding and not accurate data about who he really was, when he was born, where he was born, who his heritage is, and that's because most often he was a walk-in and just just materialized a body right then and there and didn't really go through the whole birth process. The lifetime that belongs to the name Saint Germain, and the one that most people associate with him, was his most recent one. And yes, it was the 1700s, but it was also the 1500s, the 1600s, the 1700s, and some of the 1800s. He was.
So he lived quite a while in this last.
Yes, over 300 years in the same body.
Amazing.
And
that's been documented that he lived that long. Never aged, right?
Never looked past the age of 40 to 50, depending on whose opinion of what 40 or 50
right.
looked like. And met many people. 50, 60 years later that he knew when they were children, and they would see him and he looked exactly as he did 50 or 60 years prior, and they assumed that it was his father or grandfather that they knew as a child, and he would say, "No, my dear, it was I," and there's a famous quote where someone says to him, "Well, if that was true, you must be well over 100 years old." And his answer was, "Well, that's not impossible." they called him the Wonder Man of Europe. And being that the time period that he lived in were times that were well documented and that there is historical data that's not metaphysically slanted, it's just the facts of the time, it is easy to trace and see how long he lived. And what he did quite often is he would assume aliases to take the spotlight off of himself and the fact that he didn't age. And he would fake his death and then pop up somewhere else with a different name, you know.
I see. Now, did he leave behind writings at that time, or did
he wrote a book that is currently published, and you can buy it through Manly Palmer Hall's organization, the Philosophical Research Society, and it's called The Holy Trinosophia, and it's written in French, but it's translated into English, and it's got a lot of alchemical secrets, and you know, it was something that he wrote in the 1700s.
Does he get into monatomic gold? I just have to ask you, powdered gold. Does he talk about that?
He doesn't call it that, and there is reference to a white powder that people saw him with or saw around him. I asked him about that. I asked him if it was what we call ormus or the anatomic gold. And he said, no, it really wasn't. It's more like the Subhuti of Sai Baba. It was the divine ash that his body just created. And that was the white powder that was around him.
He manifested to you when you were a child, correct?
Yes, and as an adult too. It's off and on quite a few times in my life.
I see. And do you have a vision, or how does it appear? How does he appear?
Well, he's appeared to me in lots of different forms. He's appeared to me in actual physicality. That's what I call the physical manifestations, to where he looked as solid as you and I would appear to each other. He has not done that often, maybe 10 or 12 times throughout my life. There's been times when it's been interdimensional or telepathic or on what I call the movie screen, the third eye movie screen. And when those would happen, at first I thought, oh, I'm just making this up. And then I said something to him one time about it, and he said, oh, you think you were making that up? Try conjuring up a vision of me or anyone else and hold it in your mind's eye in the great detail that I revealed myself to you, and see how long you can hold that thought or that vision. And of course, I tried and tried and tried, and you can't do it. So, you know, so now I've learned that is a form of manifestation. So he's come all different ways, and a lot of times he changes his appearance, especially in the beginning. He changed his appearance, and I said to him one time, "Why do you always look different?" You know, and he kind of laughed, and he said, "Well, because I can." and then he said, "No, seriously, the reason is I want you to recognize me by my energy and not by my appearance. Appearances can be faked and duplicated, but energy cannot."
Mm.
So it was it was a training period for me to recognize his real energy and not be swayed by physical appearance.
Okay, now my understanding of just the metaphysical movement in general is that we're going through a period of ascension and transcendence and rising, and our DNA is changing. Can you talk a little bit about ascension and what he says about that?
Well, what ascension is, in the way that he describes it and the way he's taught me, is because beforehand my thought of ascension was more graphic of ascending, where you lift up and go somewhere and disappear, so to speak, and the vision of Jesus rising into the heavens and all of that. And he tells me that it's really the opposite of that. Ascension is really descension, in the fact that what we consider ascension, or how you really translate from the third dimensional physical form into the higher divine self, is that you bring the higher aspects of yourself, you know, your I am presence and the Christ consciousness and the higher self, and I've got that in reverse order, that's from the top going down. You bring those parts of you into your physical body. Or another way of saying it is you expand your consciousness out to encompass those aspects of yourself. So it's really bringing those higher energies into the physical body that causes us to translate or transform, rather than getting airy-fairy and floating up and escaping somewhere. And so that's what we're really doing is anchoring in those higher frequencies and higher dimensions into this earth plane and into our physical earth bodies, and then that will cause the change and cause the whole planet to lift.
What can you tell our audience as far as a practical technique for ascension? What can they do? Meditate and to Saint Germain, or how would you describe it?
Well, Saint Germain does not want to be worshipped or prayed to. He is our brother. In fact, Saint Germain in Latin is Sanctus Germanius, which means holy brother. And he considers himself everybody's bigger brother. You know, if we're in high school, he's in college, you know, just slightly ahead of us, but and willing, very willing and very available to help everyone. And the main secret to ascension, and it's very easy, actually. It's so easy that a lot of people dismiss it because it is too easy. And it's easy to say. It's easy to say, but then to do it is a little more tricky. The only thing one needs to do to ascend or transform or translate, or whichever term someone wants to use, they're all kind of interchangeable, is to raise their frequency.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a multitude of ways to do that. A lot of people think they have to do lots of chanting or affirmations or eat a certain way or do this, do that.
Work their way up to it, sure.
Yeah, stand on your head and throw avocados at the wall, you know, whatever practice. And all of those things can and do work, and people find what fits them and what gives them a feeling of satisfaction or results. I mean, really, if there's a million people, there's a million paths. We all have our own unique way of achieving that. There's no one rule or one practice that's going to work for everyone. It's not a one-size-fits-all type of thing. So he always says to let your heart guide you as to what is appropriate for you and to get the answers from within your own being and your own self rather than, you know, pay thousands of dollars to go have some workshop leader tell you what worked for them, because just because it worked for them, it may not work for you. And we are to get our answers from within. And you find your answers not in your head and not in the reading lots of books. You find the answers in your heart. It's always to follow your heart and what makes you feel the most lifted. And
right, like whenever you go into any situation, you just ask yourself, does this feel good or am I off track?
Exactly.
Whenever you even walk into any building or place with people,
exactly.
Should I be here? Does this feel right or is it off?
Right,
And then your heart has a pretty strong, you know, intuition.
Mm-hmm.
That makes a lot of sense to
yes.
me. Now, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to tell you there's little easy things, too, is, you know, music and sound is frequency made audible. So if you listen to really high frequency, very uplifting music, I mean, it's even been proven by scientists that Mozart, the music in Mozart, affects people's brainwaves. And, you know, so different music that really lifts you, changes your frequency and vibration, is good to just have around you all the time, you know. Choose the highest rather than listening to rap. You know, listen to music that makes you feel very lifted and very rapturous and light. You know, having your house filled with pictures or images that touch your heart and make you feel lifted. You know, maybe a statue of an angel or geometric patterns. You know, like the sacred mandalas, things like that. Having that stuff around you to where everywhere you turn and you look, you see something that reminds you to, you know, be lifted and to be higher. You know, and there's just a lot of ways that people can use these tools that none of them themselves will get you anywhere, but they remind you, they wake up your higher senses to always think and always be in that state. And of course, using the violet flame is like the ultimate frequency eraser and karma eraser and all around great tool.
And we're going to get into that in just a minute.
Yeah.
But I want to ask you what Saint Germain had to say about the life of Jesus, specifically this character of Satan. You know, the Christians insist that there's this devil with a pitchfork just waiting to throw us into the burning fires of hell. Is this Satan character just a manifestation of the church, just a scare tactic, or was this character
most of that kind of stuff was created by religious leaders that have a vested interest in keeping their parishioners chained and in fear and listening and accepting only what they say. In other words, giving your power away to a church or a religion or a temple or a guru rather than going by your own heart and learning your own techniques and rising above, you know. So there is, in my understanding, there is really no Satan as a being outside of ourselves that's creating all this havoc. What there is we all have our own duality within us. We have some people call it our light side and our dark side, or our shadow side, or our self-saboteur self, you know, whatever you want to call it. We all have, because we contain all things, and because we can tap into anything that there is in the universe, because we are all one, and you can tune in to whatever aspect of the one that you want to, there is a less attractive side to all of us. You know, it's easy for us to point to the Mid-East or something and say, God, they're crazy. They're just killing each other and there's just so much hatred over there. But it wouldn't exist in the universe if we didn't all have a little piece of that in ourselves, you know, under the right conditions. So that could be called maybe Satan or, you know, the lower energies. And as we grow and bring in more of our higher aspects, that stuff just naturally leaves. You know, you shine a light into the darkness, and the rats and the cockroaches scurry. Mm-hmm. You know,
they scurry.
They cannot stay in the light.
Right. Now, what does Saint Germain have to say about the year 2012? Is the Mayan calendar accurate? Is this the end of a 25,000-year cycle, or is it just another year?
Well, it's all of the above. There's definitely a shift coming, and 2012, every major religion and philosophical belief and all of that all kind of point to 2012 as the time period. Whether it's exactly 2012 or it's 2011 or 2013 or even 2007 has a lot to do with the collective consciousness and how soon we can move into the new frequencies. A lot of it, it's not all just going to happen on December 21st, 2012. You know, as everything is normal, boom, we're in the fifth dimension. It's a gradual process, and the process actually started with the harmonic conversion back in 1987.
Absolutely, 25 years exactly before 2012.
Yeah. Right. So we've been.
So we're in it now. I mean, you look at you look at the booksellers, and The Secret is the number one book, not in the New Age market, out in the general market. I mean, something's happening here.
Yes. Well, you can see the shifts and the changes in every aspect of our lives. It's just everywhere, except the media chooses not to report too much of it. You know.
No.
But if you look
at it, we are the new media now.
Yes. Yeah, the internet is really.
We're the media, sure.
Yeah, the new age type radio stations like ours and the internet, you know, really has blown the lid off of the control of information.
Absolutely.
We can all be publishers and broadcasters, and you know, and people are just changing. You know, people that don't even know they're changing are changing. It's not just the New Age folks and the conscious seekers. You know, you run into average, you know, Jane and Joe America or Jane and Joe European or whatever, and all of a sudden things will come out of their mouth that they would have never said or thought 5 or 6 years ago, and they may not understand the metaphysical principles or spiritual principles, but they're living it. And, of course, that's all that really matters is how you live your life, not what you know in your head. It's the who you become that's more important than your esoteric knowledge. You see the reverse. You see people that have studied metaphysics all their life. You know, they know what every book says. They know what all the principles say, but they don't live it. They're not walking their talk or living, you know, through the knowledge. They have not become the knowledge. And then there's other people that have never read a metaphysical book at all, but are living the principles. And that's more important.
Now let's talk about this technique known as the violet flame. Why don't you describe it and explain how it can benefit people?
Okay. The violet flame is an actual, existing, tangible, interdimensional fire, and it exists, and I've been very blessed on several occasions to see it with third dimensional eyes and to actually photograph it. I didn't know till the film was developed that I was photographing.
Wow.
But you know, I developed the film and I go, oh my God, there's a violet flame right in the middle.
It really is violet, huh?
Yes. And the way it looks is exactly like our third dimensional fire, you know, a fireplace or whatever, only our fire flickers in from white, well, actually from the little tiny blue center all the way through white and yellow and orange and, you know, and flickers and all of that. The violet flame looks exactly the same, only it runs from a real intense hot pink to lavender and violet and deep purple edges. And It's sometimes called the sacred fire or the secret fire. And it's always been around, and anyone that ascended or was an adept or a high level student of this kind of stuff knew about the violet flame. Their master or teacher, usually an interdimensional, non-physical master or teacher, would reveal the violet flame to them just as they were about to ascend. And it was the secret final touch. I mean, Jesus went through it, you know, Buddha went through it, everybody that has, you know, raised themselves out of the third dimensional physicality went through the violet flame. But it was, you know, usually secret. And in the 1930s, Saint Germain went through a lot of hoops on the other side to allow the violet flame to become common knowledge so that we could use it as a tool to ascend faster. And what the violet flame does is it transmutes anything that's not desirable, misqualified thoughts, actions, deeds, negative thoughts, karma, misunderstanding with people, undesirable qualities in yourself, such as low self-esteem or feelings of unworthiness or emotional pain and anger and
trauma.
Feelings of separation and lack, poverty consciousness, you know, on and on and on. I mean, just the violet flame is only limited by one's imagination. And so by using the violet flame, you can transmute all of these lower aspects of yourself into higher aspects. It doesn't just take it away, which would be great in itself if it took it away, but it's the ultimate concept of alchemy, of turning lead into gold. So the violet flame will take all the lead aspects of ourselves and turn them into the golden light of the Christ consciousness. And it's a very fast way to completely and totally change oneself and raise frequency and vibration.
Well, I've been practicing it the past week or two, and I feel a sense of calmness, a little bit different. It's hard to describe, but why don't you take us through the technique, and we can all do this on our own.
Well, there's many different ways of using the violet flame. The what I call violet flame 101 is an easy kind of technique. It takes me much longer to explain it than to actually do it, but I'd like to explain the detail and give people maybe a visualization that they can use to remind them of what they're doing so that they have an understanding of what they're doing. Once you have the understanding of what you're doing, you don't have to memorize a bunch of stuff to say. You know the concept, and you can just pull it in and use it with your own words, and it just happens very quickly. Once you understand it, you can do the whole transmutation stuff and with the violet flame in like 30 seconds if you want to. In the beginning, people usually take a little longer because they have that concept, oh gosh, am I doing this right? And I don't want to miss anything. And when in reality, the violet flame is very intuitive, and it will make up for what you forgot to say.
It's your intent.
Yes, it is. It's 100% your intent. And, there are certain organizations that have very structured, written, little rhymy things to say to use the violet flame. And they spend hours a day reciting these things back and forth. And, of course, they all say, oh, it came from Saint Germain and this and that. And what Saint Germain has told me is like, well, people can do that if they want, but they spend more time trying to memorize these things and getting it right than their intent. And the words become the whole practice to them sometimes when it should be the other way around. He goes, I don't care what a person says, it's better, or how they say it, it's better to come from your heart and have the emotion and the feeling and the intensity of desire. That is much more productive and effective than these cute little rhymey words. So,
right, you gave me a pretty straightforward visual with the crystal light and the transformation. Why don't we go through that so everyone
okay.
at home can do that?
Okay. So what I suggest people do, and this is what I do for myself, is I either sit comfortably or I lay down flat on my back in bed. And,
sure.
You know, position is not important, just that you're comfortable. And sometimes, you know, I do it when I wake up in the morning and I do it when I go to sleep at night. So hence the laying in the bed is, you know, the easiest. And first you ask for the violet flame to be made manifest within you. Some people like to call upon a deity of choice to produce that violet flame for you, or once you get past that and you realize that you are a master yourself and a creator God, you can just say, you know, I call upon the violet flame to be made manifest within me now. So whether you use a deity or you just use your own request doesn't matter. It only matters to you, so pick what you want to do. And call in the violet flame. And the visual that I use is I see a big ball of violet flame, you know, this big ball of fire, come in through my crown chakra and come into my entire body and just flood my whole body so that everything within my skin, and including my skin, is blazing with the violet flame. And you can ask for it to fill every speck within your body, all your organs, all your cells, your nerves, your bones. You know, you can get real detailed if you want, or you can just call it in and see the visual or feel that visual and the intent that everything be there. So once you bring it into yourself, then I also expand it out so that it's surrounding me. So I'm standing in a kind of like a big egg shape of violet flame, and it's outside me and inside me. And the being outside yourself concept, or the purpose of that, is to include your other bodies. You know, you've got your physical body, but then you've got your mental, emotional, and spiritual body. You want to contain all of your bodies in the violet flame. So the first step is bringing it in. The second step is asking for transmutation. And you can, again, do what I call the laundry list, you know, violet flame, please transmute all karma, all negative thoughts, feelings, actions, deeds, all feelings of separation or lack of worth, you know, transmute that anger little spurt I had last week with so-and-so. Or, you know, you can get, again, real detailed with what you want to transmute. And some people like to do that.
Or just negative energy, right?
Or you can just say, you know, yeah, you can transmute negative energies and attachments and unfriendly ETs, you know, whatever. But what I just do, because it's easier and I like the easy way, is I say, please transmute anything and everything standing in my way of my total ascension and transference into my Christ self. And then you've got everything covered. The other caveat I do is I say, on all dimensions, on all levels, through all time and space, past, present, and future. When you do that, then you include all your past lives, all your future lives, because all time is simultaneous, so things that we think we haven't done yet are still happening right here and now anyway. We're just not aware of it. It covers parallel universes and other dimensions and other planets and galaxies. And, you know, it's one of those loopholes. You know, it's a loophole buster.
covers
everything.
All.
yeah. And so, you know,
you transform it like into a smoke, don't you, above your head? Or?
Yes. You know, that's just a visualization that helps me. You ask the violet flame then to transmute all this stuff. And my little visualization is that all this little dark stuff and this little negative stuff gets burnt out, and he's sort of like Swiss cheese, you know, you become like Swiss cheese with all these little holes where negative stuff used to be, is burnt out. So I kind of visualize it all going up out of my crown as smoke. And then you want to tell it what to turn into. A lot of people just say, you know, use the violet flame and just stop at that point. Again, with the Swiss cheese understanding, you've got all these vacant apartments for negative stuff to move in. And you can be walking down the mall and someone might have an argument there, and that energy can just come into you, and all of a sudden you feel angry, and it's like, what happened? Why is
you want to fill it back up again?
So you want to, yes, you want to fill it. You want to tell, tell the violet flame or the divinity what to transmute this yucky stuff into. And here's where one can, another place where one can be very creative. My personal preference at this point, since we're going into the golden age, and the Christ energy is golden, like metallic gold, I ask the violet flame to transmute all that has been transmuted into the golden light, you know, the Christ consciousness light. So I then visualize this big metallic gold ball of light above my head, and then I bring that into my body and ask it to permeate my entire body and to wrap around me. And, you know, bring that energy in. You can bring in the energy of your choice. If you're working with something physical, a physical ailment, and you want to have healing, you can bring in the emerald light, you know, of the
Raphael,
the ray.
Hmm?
Yeah, the ray of abundance and prosperity and vibrant health and light. You can bring in the pink ray of the unconditional love. You can bring in, you know, whatever you want. And you can also layer them. You're not limited to just bringing one in. You can bring in all 13 rays if you want, you know. So that's basically the
really
steps.
Practical method that we can all use. And I've been using it, and it does make sense. And I really appreciate you, you know,
yeah.
So easily. Now, I want to jump onto a few more little topics, and then we got to run. I'm fine.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about gem elixirs. I'm really fascinated by them. My understanding is that gemstones and minerals, and you crush them up, and then you drink them in liquid.
No, you don't crush. No, you don't have to crush them up.
Mm-hmm.
It's vibrational. It's you still get to keep the gemstone. You get to eat.
Okay.
You get to eat your cake and have it too. It's perfect.
Well, there's some people that sell them and they crush them into bits into powder, but you don't. You don't have to do that.
No, you don't have to do that. A long time ago they did do that, but now that we understand vibration and homeopathics and the law of vibration and similarities and transferring of energy into water, it's very similar to the way they make flower essences. They do not crush the flowers and put them into a liquid. They take the flowers and place them in a bowl of water and let the flowers sit there through a sun and a moon cycle, you know, 24 hours. It's best to do it on a full moon so you really get a lot of that light in. And you know, a little hocus pocus, again, a little intent. And the vibration of that flower or that gem, all of which have their own frequency and their own energy pattern and their own meaning, then gets instilled into that water, and that water then becomes the gem elixir or the flower tincture. Alcohol, a lot of people go, gosh, why do you use alcohol? It must be really a bad thing. A really good quality of alcohol holds that frequency and the vibration and keeps it from dissipating and can sometimes even increase it. So that's how those are made.
If you had to pick one or two for rejuvenation and just energy, what would you recommend to our audience?
Of gem elixirs?
Right, yeah.
Well, for physical rejuvenation, probably an emerald and or a tourmaline. Tourmaline carries a lot of electrical charge to it. For reaching the higher realms and really opening up your crown chakra and allowing more of the higher energies to come in. You can't beat amethyst. And again, it's that little violet. And and diamond is a real good all-around crown chakra opening. It contains all the color rays within it. You know, how a diamond sparkles in the light, you'll see yellow, green, red, purple, turquoise, you know, every color is within the diamond. The diamond ray is very special. And ruby gives you strength and vitality, and it's a heart chakra opener. It's sometimes called the master stone because it does so many different things. Basically, the color of the stone gives you a clue as to which chakra level it's working on. So
okay.
yellow stones would correspond with the solar plexus and with issues of power and strength and balance and stability. Anything pink or green or red, well, red can be the base chakra, but also a certain kind of red can also be the heart. And the blues, the lighter blues, are the throat chakra, which is also called the power center. And the darker blues is the third eye, and the purples are the crown chakra, and, you know, et cetera. And, yeah.
Well, that's fascinating. I think we're going to hear more and more about gem elixirs and how they can help people.
The first time I started doing gem elixirs was in the 80s, and I went and got a Whole Life Expo booth, and I was going to sell all these gem elixirs, and I sat there the whole weekend and sold one bottle because I was a little ahead of my time. Nobody knew what they were, you know.
Exactly. Well, I'm fascinated by them and gemstones. I want to close with kind of a fun question just to go out with. In your bio, it says you have an Elvis Presley anecdote, but I just want to let you know, I've read biographies on Elvis. I'm fascinated by him. And he got deeply involved in metaphysics during the 90s.
Yes.
And I think he went soul searching. So why don't you talk a little bit about Elvis?
Well, Elvis's very favorite book, and he used to buy it by the cases and travel with it and pass it out to people, is The Infinite Way by Joel Goldman, which is a very, very powerful metaphysical book. And Elvis was a healer. There's anecdotes from people that traveled with him that he actually brought a few people back from the dead or from the near dead. You know, there'd be traffic accidents as they were traveling around, and Elvis would jump out and work on these people, and they'd, you know, come back, and they'd look, and he'd say, "Don't you ever tell anybody I did this, man, and, you know, enjoy your life," and he'd get in the car and go off. He was really something. But the main thing about Elvis is that, you know, he achieved such a level of fame through his voice and affected men and women equally. Very few of the swoony, idly kind of singers had male fans as well as the females, usually the females that were, you know, all giddy over them. But Elvis really touched everybody's life. He's been gone he left in 1977, so, you know, 30 years. This August 16th will be 30 years since he's been gone. And people that are just being born now, you know, people that are 11, 12, 13 years old, they're big Elvis fans. I mean, he's continuing to touch people's lives. And the reason why he came to the planet at the time he did is because in Atlantis, he was with Saint Germain and a lot of other people in the healing temples. And he was a very profound, high-level healer, and he did it through sound and through his voice.
That makes sense.
All of the Atlantean type, you know, all the people that were around in Atlantis, which is most of us, when it doesn't matter if he's singing Heartbreak Hotel or Love Me Tender or a gospel song, the words don't really matter. It's the quality of his voice and the tones of his voice that lift and soothe and heal people. And people are so drawn to Elvis because we remember him on a subconscious level from Atlantis. And he
certainly was a spiritual component to his music.
Mm-hmm, yes. And he opened up so much on our planet. You know, he just the things that he did on a third dimensional level, I mean, he's the one that really broke the color barriers and allowed the black people to claim their own music and to be able to prosper and not be hidden back. He was the first popular artist to list his backup singers on his records and to give them their due and recognize them. And he brought the guitar, which was a kind of a joke type instrument back then, and it was like a hillbilly thing. Look at the guitar now, you know.
That's the star, and
how prominent it is, and all the advancements that were made in guitars and electrical.
Definitely.
And all of that. And
well,
of course,
I want to thank you for being on the show. Okay. We're running low on time, but tell us the audience when your time slot is.
I'm on Wednesdays at 8:00, from 8 to 9. West, you know, Pacific time, and my show is called Ascension Secrets of Saint Germain, and my website is ascensionsaintgermain.com.
Thank you, Troika, for joining us.
Well, thank you so much, Mike. It's been great.
It was great. The time just flew. Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. All right, that was Troika on Wednesday evenings from 8 to 9, and we just have about 10 minutes left or so, so I want to go over the news of the day, and then talk a little bit about the format of our new show, Odyssey, and tell you a bit more about myself. I'm the host, Mike Schultz, and I've produced two DVDs on my main forte, which is Ancient Mysteries and the Ancient Astronaut Theory, this idea that they were UFOs or an advanced race who were involved in the building of the pyramids and Stonehenge and Easter Island and all of these ancient monuments from thousands of years ago. So if you're very interested in the subject, which so many of you are, please go to my website, which is fountainsofyouth.net. That's fountainsofyouth.net. And you can order the DVDs. They're packed with photographs from around the globe. And they're only $15. Or just log on to the BBS website and click on Odyssey. And the link is right up there. So I'd love all of you to look into this material. It's an update of the Chariots of the Gods material from the early 70s or late 60s, and there's lots of new information that has come out, so I'm really tracking all of that as we go along. New information is always revealed. And so that's my background. I'm also a tarot reader. I read tarot over the phone nationwide, and that's on my website too, that info at fountainsofyouth.net. My co-host is an intuitive. She's a psychic, but she prefers the term intuitive. So I have to remember to say that. Her name is Candia Sanders, and she's about $100 an hour, but she will do live free readings starting next week. So if you call in around 0840 or so in the last segment, the last 20 minutes, she will give you a free live reading on the air, and your voice will be distorted a bit, so it is anonymous. And so that'll be exciting starting next Monday. As far as the news of the day, boy, the big story this week, to me, I get all my news on the Internet and news websites, is that Rosie O'Donnell, the talk show host, has come out. She says, I believe 911 was not kosher. I don't believe the official story. I have serious questions about Building Number 7. As most of you know, Building 7 was never hit by a plane. It was a big skyscraper, and it fell within 8 seconds. And it appears to have been some type of demolition, and there's all kinds of questions about it. And Rosie O'Donnell, you can look at her blog online, and she's asking all of these serious questions that the actor Charlie Sheen asked last year. And there's somewhat of a media blackout on the story. I think it's all over the Internet, but it's not being reported on television or anything. It's filtered out. And but anyway, it's important. More and more people are coming forward. And Barbara Streisand, her husband was on The View, and he was giving out 911 websites, and my understanding is that the show was preempted on the East Coast, that they pulled it. They didn't want him giving out any 911 Truth websites. But personally, I have met the last man out of the Twin Towers. His name is William Rodriguez. He was a head supervisor there for 20 years. And he said that bombs were blowing off even before the plane hit. There were bombs, and you know, and he ran downstairs at first because there were bombs in the basement, and they rescued a lot of people who were burned by these bombs. And he was offered a lot of money to shut up afterwards and to run for Congress and to be a 9-1-1 hero if he would just shut up about what he knew, but he didn't. He is a man of morals and principles. So you can Google William Rodriguez 9-1-1 online. I definitely think you should all read his story. And he goes all around the world and he travels and he tells audiences of millions in other countries about, you know, his view of what happened on 9-1-1. And it does differ from the official story. So anyway, that's my spiel on the news of the day. And I'll tell you a little bit more about my DVDs. The latest one is called The Temples of Stone, and it's named after a large stone temple in Cambodia, in the Far East. And it's actually the largest religious monument in the world. It's this giant stone temple. It's very elaborate with all sorts of ornate details and beautiful pictograms and murals and hieroglyphics of the gods at war and play. It's very similar to what you would see in Egypt. And I really feel there's a strong tie between Egypt and Cambodia. And even the blocks that they were using and the way the blocks were put together with the eye-shaped clamps were similar as they were in South America. They used the same construction techniques to put these blocks together when they built the temples. And I don't believe that was a coincidence. I believe that the ancient astronaut theory is that there was a group of gods. Some people call them the Anunnaki. Some people call them the custodians. But this group of advanced beings that used to be on this planet, and I believe that they established a very sophisticated society in Sumeria and Persia and in Egypt. And then they moved down to South America, and then in Mexico. And then their last temple that they built was in Cambodia, and it's called Angkor Wat. And you can look at amazing pictures online if you type in Angkor Wat. So my second DVD, The Temples of Stone, really gets into all of how it was built and, you know, who built it, and all of the messages and hidden symbols that were left behind of the gods at war and play on the murals and the walls, because I do believe it does tell an important story, and they were trying to leave us a message. And I don't believe that these Anunnaki gods actually built it, but I believe they engineered it from behind the scenes. Amazingly, it wasn't built near a river or the ocean or anything. It wasn't built in the normal places you would establish a city. It was surrounded by a moat of water. It's beautiful, this gorgeous, you know, stone monument. And it was deep in the jungle, and it wasn't really rediscovered until the 1800s, when some French explorers were, you know, exploring around the area, and the local natives were saying, oh, there's this lost city. It was built by the gods or the giants a long time ago, and nobody believes them. But eventually this one French botanist did some deep exploring, and he did stumble upon it, and it was rediscovered in the 1800s. So I have a number of really fascinating photographs, and hope you will all go on to fountainsofyouth.net and get that new DVD. That would be great. So we're winding down the show. I'll run over a few more things in the news. There's another interesting report out that says Marilyn Monroe was tricked into suicide and Robert Kennedy was involved in her death. That's an ongoing mystery, and it seems like bits and pieces are still coming out about that whole situation. And it appears that Kennedy and actor Peter Lawford, according to some declassified documents, were involved in maybe putting some pills next to her bedside and that sort of thing. So that is at Rents.com. I get a lot of my best news from Jeff Rents. He was a reporter working for the networks. He had a really good career as an investigative reporter, but he realized a lot of the most important stories were not getting on the air. So he went to the internet, to the new media. He's got millions and millions of people going to his website. So it's called Rents.com, R-E-N-S-E.com. Rents.com, and that's one of the best sources I go to for information. InfoWars is the other one, InfoWars.com, with Alex Jones. And we can talk about him on another day. But you know, I've made this switch over. I've canceled my newspaper, you know, several years ago, and don't watch any sort of television news whatsoever. It's a joke. And I mean, today I happened to stumble upon the radio network news, and the lead story was talking about the murder trial of Phil Spector. Well, that's really of no relevance to anybody that I know. But that was the lead story. They spent about a minute and a half on jury selection for some murder trial for a music producer who hasn't made a record in 30 years. It's ridiculous that this is the top news story. And it's really sad that our news has turned into infotainment, and Entertainment Tonight has bled over into the news. And apparently the news that spoke about Anna Nicole Smith for a couple of weeks, and this is all just a smokescreen to cover up some really important stories that are not getting, not seeing the light of day. So hopefully each week I can bring them to you. So anyway, we're excited about the new time and going live. Once again, call in next week and you can talk to Candia Sanders, the intuitive, and she will answer your questions live on the air. Now, her segment is the last 20 minutes of the show. And I generally have an interview the first 40 minutes of the show. And so next week, I usually have metaphysical teachers or authors or people who know a lot about ancient mysteries and the ancient astronaut theory are my top choices for guests on the show. So once again, the first DVD is called The Sands of Time, and that gets into six advanced civilizations all around the world, which sprang up out of nowhere in Persia, India, South America, Mexico, and China. And there were pyramids in all six of these cities. Even in China, there's pyramids. I have photographs of them. It's not very well known, but there's about 100 of them in central China. And they were constructed a bit differently. But, you know, when you ask the locals about the legends about who built these, they talk about these gods that came down in the chariots from the sky and built these pyramids and these dragon gods. And that's what they all believed in, polytheism. And I'll leave you with one last story. This is really interesting. It's really been buried, but the Shriners are connected to the Freemasons, and this is also off of Rents.com. Most Shriners are Masons, and Masons are Shriners. It overlaps. And there's been an incredible amount of fraud within their accounting, and it appears, I'm reading this article now, that only about 2% of their money went to run their charitable hospitals, and about 60% of their money went to fund the Masons and their traveling and their trips and their parties and their internal costs. So it really appears that there's a lot of accounting fraud going on within the Shriners organization. They also run circuses. They don't just run hospitals. And I've always wondered about the mistreatment of animals in these circuses. And it's disturbing to see them perform on cue and being cooped up in these cages. It doesn't seem right to me. I'm not particularly a fan of going to the circus. But the Shriners also run many circuses. And anyway, this is on U.S. World News. It's an interesting article. It's about the Shriners' charitable accounting being called into question. So you may want to check that out at rents.com. So I'm going to go ahead and wind up the show. I'm actually going to run out and do some tarot card reading tonight. I read at the local coffee house up here in Portland, Oregon. And once again, I read online. If you ever want a phone reading, that would be great. It works. The energy works right over the phone just as well as in person. So go to fountainsofyouth.net, and you can have a phone reading. You can arrange one with me. Okay, I really appreciated this time. I want to thank Troika for coming on the show. We have a fascinating lineup every day of fantastic metaphysical experts and guests. So please enjoy this network and tell all of your friends. And I will see you next week. Just thank you for listening to the Odyssey Radio Show. I'm your host, Mike Schultz, and good night.